Episode 34. I'm blinded by the light here.
35.
Is it? 35. Oh. Dropping the ball. Dropping the ball there. Today, I got a good friend on the podcast who just yesterday had his GPS bracelet cut off. So it's another chapter in the book of the life of one Johnny Bartolomeo. You said it right?
Bartolomeo, but.
Bartolomeo.
I just learned how to pronounce it last week, too, so don't feel bad.
Yeah, you're just Johnny Bart. Very, very well known. I'd heard about him for years before I actually met him. And like everybody else, when you hear about someone, you envision this person in your mind, you know? And when I finally met him, I said, you can't be, you know, because he he's, you know, very, very well known in Boston, a Boston legend, without a doubt, in all circles, not just criminal circles, but, you know, with all respected people. He has a lot of good friends and a lot of family. And when he went away, when he was 26 years old, he was part of a motorcycle club. And from me going to prison, I just have this image in my mind when I hear about, you know, motorcycle club guys with a big pot belly, the long hair, you know, I'm picturing, you know, balding on the top, but with the long hair still, trying not to let it go, and the tattoos all over him. And when I met him, you know, he looked like a bank robber from Charlestown, you know, I mean, and he looked a lot younger, you know, than I envisioned. And since I met him, he's been nothing but a great friend. I mean, he just goes above and beyond. And his energy, you know, it's just, like I said a few weeks ago, I went to court in Boston, and this probation officer in Roxbury said, you know how you meet someone and they just have good energy? And she said, that's you. And it was such a compliment, you know, when she said that. And that's what I get from you. And, you know, I know you grew up in East Boston. Tell us a little bit about growing up. I heard how you got the nickname Johnny Bart, and what it was like for you, you know, as a kid in East of Boston, they say.
You met my man, Wiggy. That's another East Boston guy. Yes. Wiggy's the best that ever did it, right?
Jermaine Wiggins, the man himself, you know.
So he always shouts me out on the radio show, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. So I got to give him a shout first and foremost, right?
Yes.
But
well, hold on. What would he say? Jermaine Wiggins. East Boston High School.
Yeah, listen, the Patriots and Jermaine Wiggins like made me a movie star in prison.
Really?
That was the best years in prison. Like, that was the, you know how, like, listen, the fastest 17, 18 weeks in the joint is what?
It's football season.
Football season.
Can't wait.
Everybody
Can't
looks
wait.
Forward to
Can't
it.
Can't wait for it.
You know, it's the marker of every year, you know what I'm saying? This is how we do time.
Yeah.
By football season.
Yes.
You know it because you're a jail guy, you know?
Yeah.
And so whenever Jermaine's a personal friend of mine, like, you know, I mean, he's one of my dear friends, you know?
Yes.
So it's a lot different than, oh, I know that guy from, he's from my town.
But, yeah, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
We grew up together. So he always used to, I mean, and he went to Marshall, he went to Georgia. I mean, Georgia's a premier football school.
They won national championship, what, 2 years in a row, right? They won the last 2 years?
And he introduces himself as Jermaine Wiggins, East Boston.
Yeah, you must have loved that. You must have loved that when he'd say that.
You know what I'm saying? And I know guys that were, you know, fans of other teams. Like, he played for the Vikings. And I had a kid that was, you know,
the
loved the Vikings. The Colts, yeah. You know what I'm saying? He played for the Colts. He played for the Panthers. But I had him, like, surprisingly send this kid – like, you know, a whole bunch of autographed pictures from the whole team. And he was like, awesome. Oh my God, I can't believe your boy sent me. You know, he come out of his cell after count. And I was like, yeah, it's my man. He's the best. Like, you know, so, I mean, it was a great common denominator, because that's what we do, right? Like, we search for common denominators. You know, like, that's what people say, oh, it's name dropping, it's this and that. We search for common denominators. Do you know this guy? Yeah, do you know that guy? Yeah. You know what I'm saying? So, I mean, I think that's how, like, for me, when I grew up in East Boston, I was kind of living an antisocial lifestyle. You know what I'm saying? I was into committing crime. I was just a wild kid. That's kind of how I got into the club. You know what I'm saying? I just do things in front of God and everybody just because I wanted that reputation. And I always say that, you know, I think I proved that to everybody else.
And you got it. And you got that myself. Reputation.
You know what I mean? So that was something that I was never really, you know, comfortable in that role. You know what I'm saying? And I was comfortable in it because I played it and I did it great. But I just think that it was a facade. And me and you had talked quite a bit about, you know, like, for me, learning was the turning point.
Yeah.
When I began to learn in prison, that's when my whole life began to change, because I didn't know I had the capacity to learn.
You stopped being proud of yourself, and you didn't know what you were capable of accomplishing until you do it.
And, you know, I told you I was taking math courses and, like, trigonometry courses at the end, and I was passing them, and I was like, wow. And it gave me the ability to not only have a sense of accomplishment. That's why when I talk, like, to community leaders sometimes, I always say, like, the best thing you could do to anybody is to teach them. Because if you give them education, it's a sense of self-worth. I began to dream big when I started to learn.
You knew anything was possible.
Anything was possible. And I, you know, I taught myself Spanish.
You know, I want to talk about that.
That's my crowning achievement.
This is the biggest thing. Puerto Rican John. Puerto Rican John. John Willis gave him that name, right?
So, yeah. Well, John Willis is, he spoke fluent Chinese.
Yes.
So, our homeboys in Danbury, we're in Danbury, Connecticut. I would always be, you know, practicing my Spanish. I would talk to everybody in the line, you know what I'm saying? Buen provecho, you know, enjoy your meal. I was talking to them. Everybody was like, we got Chinese John, we got Puerto Rican John. Because a lot of the Puerto Ricans and Dominicans really were my teachers, you know. And when I say I'm self-taught, I learned by books, but I don't want to diminish or curtail
the help
that I got from everybody along the way. It's just like, you know, I say the biggest thing in life for me is support. You know, and I had a lot of support learning. I have a lot of support today. I mean, you know, I always say that without...
So fortunate.
Listen, left to my own devices, I tell people I'd be sleeping in the Boston Common under one of those tinfoil blankets. You know, but instead I'm blessed with, you know, some of the best friends on planet Earth. You know what I'm saying? And that's really what it is for me. I wrote something on Instagram the other night, you know, about, you know, all I did was walk through open doors.
Yeah. Yeah. It was like a thank you to everybody that helped you and your family. You know, when you were away, you lost both your parents, which is everyone's worst nightmare. When I was in prison or I was in jail, and I'd see it happen to friends of mine. And I remember the guy who works for Spiro, Ollie, Spanish guy. I saw
great
him.
Dude.
They called him out. He come back from the cell and I saw him crying. I said, Ollie, what's up? And, you know, he told me he lost his mother. And I get upset, you know, hearing about it now, you know.
Because you know it's and a I just selfish saw, and, cry. You know yeah, it's going to happen at
yeah,
some point.
And, yeah, and it's just the worst nightmare. You're like, don't let it happen to me while I'm in here.
Know.
You know, I'm close to my father, and that's a terrible thing. But you have your brother Charlie, you have another brother, or who else you got?
So my brother Ronnie died as well, you know what I'm saying? So, I mean, that's, I always say, like, freedom is the consolation prize. Because me and you had talked quite a bit, and I talk quite a bit when I'm on, you know, in forums like this, that, you know, I feel sometimes that I gave my loyalty to other people other than my family. You know, and every day that goes on, I appreciate my parents more and more, because you're a parent now. How much do you appreciate your parents?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Or, you know, at least your father. You know what I'm saying? That, you know, there's so many things go on in life, and so it's so complex. There's so many moving parts to being a parent that I never really appreciated it until I got a little older, you know? And my freedom now is a consolation prize, like, without them. So my philosophy of what I always tell you is, and I use the hashtag of making my mom proud, right? So that's my philosophy today. That I try to do do something at least once a day to make my mother proud. So
and you know what about, you know, your father, you know, who's a big guy, and your mother, I think they're always proud of you in a sense. Like, yeah, you were in jail, but you were the most stand-up fucking guy. It's not like they hung their heads, yeah, you know, he ratted, or he did this scumbag crime, or he did this, right. that. You know, you always, you know, you carry yourself like you do now with your head held high, and you took responsibility for what you did, and you took it on the chin. I mean, you did, they gave you, what, 35 years, right?
I got sentenced to 420 months, right.
And I was, people hear that and they're like, wait a minute, 420 months. And they're sitting there trying to do
I thought I did good first. I was like, hold on, wait a minute.
That ain't that much, right?
So you're doing 12, yeah.
So I was telling the story the other night when we were out with Jermaine Wiggins and Adam Habibi. Actually, this he sponsored this podcast. What is it? Advanced Auto? What?
Accurate Collision of Boston, right across the street from Encore Casino. Accurate, Adam Haddad.
Accurate Collision of Boston in Everett. He's the sponsor of this podcast. Shout out, Adam Haddad. I said Habib. But so when I was out to eat with them the other night, I told them my girlfriend, who just broke up with me, so I guess she's my ex, but my girlfriend, who's Chinese, you know, she met John, and she always said, where do you know these guys from? Where do you know him from? Prison? Because not everybody I know, but everybody's, you know, in the life or was in the life or something. And so I said, no, I didn't meet him in prison, but, you know, he just got out, and, oh, what did he do? And, you know, I said, well, he ran with this, you know, this motorcycle club. And the next day, you know, she calls me up and she says,
Google.
Yeah, I Google Hell's Angel. Can I say that?
Of course.
I Google Hell's Angel. I go, yeah, yeah. Very big. Big gang. Yes, yes. You know, they're very, very big, you know. So when she said that, you know, I'd known you a while now. We're hanging out, great friends, and I had never Googled you.
Yeah.
So she said it. So, you know, and I says, you know, you should Google, you know, Johnny Bott. So I Google it, and, you know, everything comes up.
Yeah.
Your sentencing, you know, the crimes, the whole nine. And there was a part when you got sentenced, they, you know, you could address the court. And you said something here, and I want to read it if I can. I may need your reading glasses, Bundy. You got them?
There it is.
Come on. What, are you kidding me? Listen, are we all over 50?
No, I got it.
All right.
Oh, it's kind of blurry now. Yeah.
Try that, Mike. That was a 2.0.
Oh! All right. And he says, that's just the type of person I am. If you're my friend, you're my friend to the end. And although that might not have any bearing, it's just something that I thought I would like to share to my family to know that they've done an outstanding job. And although I'm in the situation that I am, I stand before the court with fierce loyalty because of my family. And I'm loyal to my family, and I'm loyal to what I'm about. And I'm about to go to federal prison for probably the rest of my life, and I probably won't be able to see my family again. But that's the road I chose, Your Honor. And that's just the way it is for me. Thank you.
Wow.
You know, I read that, and it literally gave me, it gave me chills. You know, I almost had tears in my eyes reading it, and I'm like, wow. You know, to just to, you know, come to that realization then, you know, that I'll probably never see my family again. And, you know, you're lucky, you know, you're still seeing some of them, but you were right. Right. You were right. You lost both your parents.
27 years ago.
I just said it, you know, off the hip. I didn't rehearse it. I just said just the way, the way I felt, you know, and
there was no apologies. No. There was, hey, this is where we're at. And
I was there. That was the situation I was in. I'm saying, and that was right before I got sentenced. So the judge could have said, you know, kind of whatever he wanted to say.
Yeah. You could have got up there sniveling and trying to get some time off, and I'm sorry. And I didn't, you know, I mean, what fucking balls to just stand there and just call it like it is. You know what I mean? And they say there aren't many stand-up guys anymore. There aren't many guys like you anymore. And I told you, I don't know if there was ever many guys like you, period, in any era. To, you know, people want to, you know, people want to dance and they don't want to pay the fiddler. You know, you see that a lot. But to take it on the chin like that and be, well, you're 26, 27, and to get sentenced to more years than you've been alive on this earth. I mean, you know, I got a 3 to 4 and I was fucking, you know.
You know what though, Mike? And when you say that, right? So it's humbling to me because, like, you know, we're in the North End the other night. The guy says, "Yo, I'm from Lynn. You're a legend."
Yeah, yeah.
You know, but that's humbling to me because all I did was just be me. My friend Gio, who's the fucking best guy in the whole world, is my main man, my heart. He did everything for me. If you could ever find one friend like Gio in your lifetime, you're luckier than anybody on the planet. But he always says to me, he says, "You never take credit for that." And I'm like, well, that's just who I am. But, you know, people write comments and they say that you're the solidest guy I've ever met in my whole life. You're the most stand. I mean, that's a humble. Imagine being in that conversation.
No. Being the other.
You know what I'm saying?
Just,
that's a humbling thing to me. And I think about it and I'm saying, like, well, there's multiple people say this, like, because I always think, like, yeah, you know, like my friend used to read this holiday letter I wrote and they say, "Yo, you write great. This is great." I'm saying, they're all my fucking friends. What are they going to say? This shit sucks.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Nobody's going to be critical.
No, but you got the gift of gab and you can talk and, you know, you get a hold of the English language pretty damn good, you know?
Yeah. You know what? And listen, I appreciate it at work. Listen, Mike, my philosophy in jail, right, was to do something for my mind and something for my body every day. You know what I mean? And I think that's made me a better person. And I think it's made me, you know, I'm saying this is all a trajectory for me. Right? So this is all developmental stages. I use that word processionally to you the other day. Right?
I know.
So everything is a process, right? So I'm not perfect, right? I still revert to like my old ways because it got me results quick. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like if I ever
instant gratification.
I get frustrated and I see somebody in a car that I, like we were talking about the other day. I just want to open the door and say, "Yo, what's up?" Like, but I mean,
what's happened now to me?
It's not, I can't take everything personal, but like processionally, listen, I try to do things better every single day.
Yeah.
I don't want to go back to prison. You know what I'm saying? I want to just, if I could share some of my experience, strength, and hope with people, I mean, that's really what I like to do. I love forums like this. I love to talk to people. I'm doing a commitment at a sober house on Friday. I like those forums. I like to do that because I think my story has value.
No question.
You know?
It's educational. Yeah. And people can learn from it without having to go through what you went through. But no matter what, whether it helps them or not, they're going to leave that room and go, "Wow." They're going to be talking about an hour after you left, like, because, you know, people come in and I'm not going to be the guy, I'm in an AA meeting and some old lady comes in and go, "Oh, what the fuck?" Because, you know, "Oh, well, she didn't even, you know, she drank fucking wine. You know, it's Kitty Dukakis or something. You know, I was fucking shooting heroin in my neck." Like, I'm not, it's, you know, it's what they went through, right? But a lot of times you'll go to a meeting and someone will come in and be like, you know, "You're fucking yawning." Like, all right, you know. You know, it's like in the joint, guys are there for the good time or whatever, right? They're just sitting there fucking not paying attention. But I'd like to think when you come in that, you know, everyone's listening. And after you leave, people are like, you know, blown away by it. Because no matter who I introduce you to, you know, you're just a good guy. Like I said, it's fucking great energy, you know? But back to growing up in East Boston, I heard you were somewhat of a hockey player, Jermaine told me.
Yeah, well, see, here's the thing. The legend is always larger than life, right? So, no, it's serious. It really is. Yeah, I'm saying, I guess I'm a good hockey player now. I was decent, you know what I'm saying?
There's
legends in East Boston, like the Jangra. I was down at this hockey tournament, right?
Yeah.
And I've had probably the one bad experience with a person I've had. I've had great experiences with every fucking person that I've talked to, except one person.
Yeah, you told me about that.
East Boston kid, a matter of fact. Well, whatever. So
they
got the Jangrig, this kid, Jan Gregorio, he's 63 years old. He's like an all-star hockey. He's still playing hockey.
Really?
Sandro Grudy's like 52 years old. He's younger than me. He's the GOAT. He's still playing hockey. These guys are still playing hockey in the hockey tournaments.
Yeah.
I come out of jail after 27 years. They still got this hockey tournament. My friend Sal Santostefano runs a tournament with the kid Boots. And they still run this tournament for Anthony Albano. And there was kids still playing. Yo, it was great to be down there.
Yeah,
great
they're
to be
awesome,
around
you know?
Amazing.
Went to the Dangle Fest in South Boston. All the kids there. And, you know, same thing. It's a great time. And they play with their hearts on their sleeve.
I love everything East Boston. I like to be down there. I like to walk around there. When I first got out of prison and I took a walk around here, I just walked around the streets and I had tears in my eyes just walking.
Yeah.
Like, and it was a sunny day. It was nice. And it was just such an emotional time because, I mean, here I am back in the city listen, Mike, every day in jail that I tried to get through this bid and I got through this bid, I never thought I'd make it.
Yeah.
You know, it's a fucking, picture having 5 days in on a 35-year bid, 10 years in, 15 years. You know, you're just never going home. Who cares? Yeah. Well, you still got 15 fucking years.
Yeah, how easy is it to fucking stab someone and kill someone and pick up a fucking life bid and it's all right. over? It's
or hurt your, you know, like fucking do drugs, eat honey. I could shoot dope and eat honey buns would be a great bid. Yeah. But that lasts for what, 10 days?
Yeah.
You get away with that?
Yeah.
And then, you know, I mean, I just, you know, so the thing is for me, what worked for me was discipline. To be disciplined.
What was the biggest thing when you got out and you went back to your neighborhood? Because I always say things changed so much, right? Between 1994. When did you get sentenced?
I got sentenced in the case was in 96. Okay. And I got out in 2023.
So 1996, you think back. I remember back then I got locked up in 96 and got out in 2000. So right. I knew, you know, cell phones just come out before that. And we had the Nextel two ways.
Right.
And, you know, doing the UPS things with the weed. And you think, right, when we first got cell phones, there weren't cameras on them. There right. wasn't fucking Google. It was like the coolest thing, just having a flip phone and having them little Nextel two ways you could talk. And you think between then, 1996, and when you get out in 2023, how much technology has fucking advanced and how much the city changed you grew up in. It's fucking wild. Like, it's like you went away and, you know, there was home phones. And I was thinking that today because we're texting back and forth and I'm like, wow, he must be thinking, wow, nobody talks on the phone anymore, right?
Well,
I know you adapt quick, but I mean,
it's a good question, right? But so what I tell everybody is, I don't know what it is. Like, and everybody says this is an amazing trait that I have. Like, you know what I'm saying? But it's just like, it's a seamless integration. And I wasn't in a box.
Yeah.
In the cellar, you know what I'm saying? I seen TV, I seen the technology. Yeah. We had got computers in the prison. I was sending emails.
Yeah, the tablets. My friends was always recently.
Yeah, we had tablets for movies and, you know, emails at the end. And then like my friends would always be telling me about, you know, then of course, I mean, there's contraband in prison. We know that.
Yeah.
You know, I would see, you know, certain, you know, see phones. People would show me this, the other thing. I'd be like, oh, all right. So I kind of knew what to expect. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And I studied a lot about those things, so I would know about those things. So I would be ready, you know what I'm saying? So, I mean...
My friend Joe Donovan got out after 24 years. He got a life bid as a kid. He was 18, and they changed the juvenile law, and he was on here. And I used to tell him, right? He was really well-read. He's a smart kid, too. Thinks he's a little smarter than he is, Joey Drama. But no, definitely not as smart as you.
But listen, come on. It's all relative.
But I used to say, here's a guy who knows. He's so knowledgeable about everything. I said, but you got no life experience with it. Like, he could tell you, you know, how to beat a cold.
Yeah,
go,
right?
Joe, you never have like a cold in the street, you know? But it was funny because he knew everything about everything. But, you know, he hadn't experienced it, you know? But that's my guy. But he used to say, I remember he got out and a guy I was with the other night, Joe Rodemake, a real good guy. I was with him in the North End. Another serious guy, well respected, knows a lot of people. I'm sure he knows a lot of people, you know. I remember Joe said, how am I going to figure out how to use these, you know, cell phones? He goes, same way we all did, watching porn, you know?
Yeah, right, right. I mean, of course. That too.
We're laughing. But going back to when you got arrested for your crimes, what was it that you went away for?
So, it was a drug conspiracy, a drug case.
Fucking conspiracy.
But I'm saying there was weight too. We had
we had
methamphetamine, cocaine, and then in the course of the DEA's investigation, they just fell upon this murder that, you know, I ran a guy over that was in a rival gang. I killed him. Then assaulted another guy with a hammer from a rival gang. You know what I'm saying? So those acts of violence kind of fell like right into their lap. You know, and that's something that, you know, that happened. And what happened was
that you'd gotten away with.
Well, my sentence was that they gave me the option to plead out to 35 years. Right. And they would package all that up. Norfolk County was Jeff Locke was the
Jeffrey
DA.
Locke. Yep.
So they gave me the option to my lawyer. They said, hey, listen, he can wrap all this up. Nobody has to come back and testify, because if you don't do it, our initial strategy was to take the drugs and the feds and go to Norfolk Superior for the murder,
because
we thought we could have beat it. You know what I'm saying? There was nobody in the car. They had fingerprints, but it was my car. You know, so the other thing you were saying about your father, right, when we were talking downstairs and he was saying, you know, you had some little slick comment that he made to the cops. It's a state above Georgia, right?
Yeah.
So they brought my father, right, into the grand jury, And they were like, my mother's there with the St. Jude statue. Yeah. Oh, Jesus, Charlie. You know, my mother was the best, right?
Yeah.
And my father, they were asking my father to put him on the stand, the grand jury. And they said, you know, what did your son John look like on such and such a day? And he was like, you know, he sometimes he got a beard, sometimes he does. He goes, well, what did he look like on this day? Do you remember this day? He goes, oh, yeah, I remember that. He goes, what did he look like? He goes, handsome. Handsome kid. So listen, and that was it. They didn't ask him no more questions. You know what I'm saying? My friend Gio, right, after this guy got killed in Weymouth, right, my friend Gio was in the driveway with another guy, and the cops ran up on him, the Weymouth detectives, and be like, you know, what are you doing here? And he's like, nothing. It's my friend's house. And he goes, you know John Bartolome Norris? I don't know. Do you know him? He goes, well, he's my best friend. Do you know where he is? No. Do you know what he looks like? No. He goes, hey. Told his partner, hey, come over here. You got to see this kid. This guy's a fucking riot. Come over here and talk to this guy. You know, but they were just my friends going to try to clean up my house and stuff.
Yeah.
And the thing is, you know, a point I want to bring to this too as well, and I think it's really important, is so we're talking about somebody died in this whole thing, right?
Yeah.
So when my brother Ronnie died while I was in prison.
How did he die?
So my brother Ronnie really had a heart attack, you know what I'm saying? Probably aided by the maybe something else, I don't know, but he had a heart attack. That was his cause of death.
Yeah.
So that was the worst. I experienced episodic depression. I'm saying, you know, my brother died, and it's a certain episodic event that happened. Event that happens, right? And because of the event, so I'm not like a stressed out guy. I'm not a depressed guy. I'm always really in a good mood.
But definitely.
That stuff like pulled me into the ground, you know? And what I did was I kind of juxtaposed the feelings that I was having. And when I figured that I engineered those feelings in other people, when I killed somebody that they loved.
Yeah.
So it was really a kind of an equalizer for me. And it kind of made me feel contrite about what I did. You know what I'm saying? So I'm not trying to glorify what I did.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I'm at a point in my life where like, I understand that, you know, listen, we always talk about this. I'm looking for extra innings. I'm looking for overtime. Yeah. I'm 55. You know what I'm saying? I'm trying to get, you know, so the way I believe is that, you know, there's for me now, I'm not that guy no more. You know what I'm saying? I went to prison. I did whatever I did in prison, and that was the way it was. But I still feel, you know, contrite about that. I've engineered those feelings in other people. Like my mother was distraught about my brother.
Ruined.
And you know, so.
How old was he?
My brother Ronnie was 39.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, so that was tough for us. And I couldn't go to the funeral.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, that morning, the case manager was looking for me to make a phone call. You know how hard it is to get a phone call in prison when they're looking for you for a phone call. First thing I thought it was my mother. I had just got off the phone with my father getting the lines for the ticket. I ran a ticket in prison.
Yeah.
Just got the basketball lines. And, you know, 20 minutes later, they call me out the air. So you got to call your father. I'm like, I thought my mother died.
Yeah.
You know, and I found out it was my brother. And, you know, it was a really, you know, those are hard feelings to square with, right?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Because I feel like I let my family down by, you know, giving my loyalty to something that wasn't my family. And when I give my loyalty to somebody, if you're my friend, you're my friend till the end. That's just the way it is.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So I never take it back. But in hindsight, when I look at it, I wished I had gave my family the same degree of loyalty I gave other people.
Yeah.
And I feel like, you know, and it's something that, like I tell you, it's a consolation prize, and it's just something that, you know, I come to grips with. You know, that's why my philosophy is do something every day to make my mother proud.
You know what I think about what a guy like you, and especially when you were younger and you were wild and you were jacked up, and like whether it's, you know, the Italian, you know, mafia, whatever you want to call it, or it's a motorcycle gang, it's this and that. They see a kid like you who's got balls, who stand up, who'll do anything. And, you know, maybe it ain't the case, you know, but they use, you know, a guy like you because, you know, you put fear into people, right? And they can say, hey, we're going to send this guy. And, you know, by throwing your name around, you know what I mean? And then, you know, who fucking pays the ultimate price? I mean,
and who benefits, right? Other people benefit from that, right?
Yeah, other people benefit. But, yeah, these are lessons you fucking learn. You know what I mean?
But, obviously. You know, I will tell you this. And like I told you, I had an interview with that Vice TV, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, nothing ever materialized of it because I didn't give them what they wanted. They asked me that, give us something that nobody knows about the Hell's Angels Motorcycle Club. And I was like, I got something great for you. And they were like, oh, their ears perked up. Yeah. And I was like, when I needed 20 grand to go to college, they paid for it. And they made me the person that I am today, educated, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you know, a person that has self-worth because of learning, who ventured into learning on his own because he had the capacity to learn and the wherewithal to, you know, get through this whole bid and learn every single day. So that's something they did. That was the last I heard from them.
That was the end. That was the end of you on Vice. Yeah, they wanted you to spill the beans on something. You know
what they thought.
Yeah,
but that's the truth. I'm saying that is something that nobody would know about the club.
So where did you go when you first went into prison? What was the first place you went to, and what places were you in? And tell us a little bit about the different joints you were in, so to speak, Mark.
Right. So, but the first one I got sentenced to was Judge Young sentenced me after I said what I said.
And
that's just part of the sentencing transcript. I said much more.
I read more than that judge.
So I said to him, and the thing that really got him, he's a theatrical guy, but you know, listen, really smart guy. I've read almost all of his opinions.
You're in the law library a lot. I spent a lot of time.
I'm saying, you know, I look up to somebody that has that type of, you know, the vernacular, the syntax, he used the vocabulary. I mean, he's a smart guy,
you
right?
You know, some of the times in their decisions, they throw
a little hand in the end. Listen, the worst word you could ever say to anybody in
legalese
is, however.
Yeah.
Say,
However, we're not going to overturn this.
So I said, you know, to him, I said, you know, Judge, you know, with all due respect, you sit under that flag and you tell people to cooperate against their friends. But we as American citizens,
I read that,
you know, if the enemy surrounded me and you on a foxhole, we'd either leave there together alive or we'd both be dead. If they wanted the country secrets, we wouldn't give them. Right. That's what we're taught. As American citizens, you know what I'm saying? So I kind of made that correlation, and obviously
he didn't like it.
He was offended by that. And you know, he said, "You've done nothing but serve your own needs, don't sully the names of the people that have served this country." But I mean, at the end of the day, when I got to Leavenworth, he put me in maximum security for the length of my stay. For 35 years, he wanted me in maximum security.
Yeah,
and the first place I went to is probably one of the most violent federal prisons at the time, the Hut House, Leavenworth Penitentiary.
I read the book, The Hut House. Bundy, you ever read The Hut House?
Yeah.
Tom Silverstein?
Yeah.
Huh?
Yep.
Bundy, what's up? This is at the interview. I thought Bundy was going to get involved. But at Leavenworth Penitentiary, that's the first place I went to. And it was a... My mother, she was the best, right? She was like, John, oh my God, they told me, because we got locked up under investigation. There was a murder in my unit. So about 20 people got locked up under investigation. And the secretary, I don't know why she said this to my mother, because my mother would call, my son hasn't called. Like, my mother was like the ultimate mother, you know?
Yeah.
And poor Barbara. Listen, so the secretary said to her, well, somebody got murdered here last night. And so when I get out of the hole, because we got out in a couple of days, they know who did it, but just locked everybody up as a kind of a show, you know?
Yeah.
So when I called my mother, she was like, oh my I said, Ma, nobody got murdered. Somebody died here. I said, it's different now. Ma, you ain't going to believe this, but they give us cookies and milk at night. I swear to God, they give you a snack. They come around and give you.
Yeah.
She goes, no, they don't. I said, Ma, listen, it's different. They don't kill people here. It's different. It's 90s. They don't do that stuff. But, you know, so Leavenworth was, I loved it because, you know, it was really loose. It was free. There was a bunch of great guys. I met some of the best guys on the planet. Matter of fact, Randy Lanier, who got a life sentence a week.
I got a 3-year sentence for marijuana and state prison.
And he's in Boston.
He overturned it. They changed the law or something happened?
It's a complex story, but he had a CCE. Once they give you a continuing criminal enterprise, they can give you a life sentence for it. But there's a whole other part to the story that would probably be long and involved. But I got the book. You can read it.
Yeah.
It's great. So now I started out at Leavenworth. I went to...
How many years in Leavenworth?
I was there for about 4 years. Yeah. Then I got a transfer to a medium security, which was Petersburg, brand new. I lasted there about, 6 months, and I was back in the shoe for assault.
Where was Petersburg?
Petersburg, Virginia.
All right.
And it was all like DC dudes. It was all, you know, it was a kind of a fucking...
I heard about the DC.
Listen, but then again, there was some guys there from DC that were fucking guys. Sweethearts that I loved, you know what I'm saying? So, I mean, you can't paint it with a broad brush. Yeah, right. But I'm saying, you know, we have to use generalization sometimes, right, Mike? And we do it often, right?
Yes. But,
so, anyway, I got into a fight in the Chow Hall. Somebody robbed something from me.
Worst place to get in a fight.
Yeah, but you know what the thing is? I was out of there. Yeah. I wasn't staying no more because what happened is they tried to put me in the kitchen. I was doing the ticket. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I had made a remark to the warden, and the captain called me down and says, "What are you doing talking to the warden like that?" And I was like, "Yeah, I'm saying, you know, there's a certain situation." I said, "I just voiced my opinion to him." The next day, I was in the kitchen at 5 o'clock in the morning. Ugh. So I knew somebody had robbed something from me. So I just used that as a pretext to
get out of there.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? And I bashed the dude's head in, started a huge thing. They had a lockdown. And, you know, so that was, then, you know, from there I
went. So how was Petersburg other than that, in a new place?
Especially
you were comfortable in Leavenworth, right?
Yeah, it was
even
great.
Though it was Leavenworth, you liked it. You were all good guys, and they sent you somewhere else.
And then I went to another penitentiary after that, Lee County.
Where's that?
And Tip of Tennessee, Kentucky, and Virginia. And that was not a bad spot, you know what I'm saying? Then I went to Fairton from there. That's when the joint started getting nice.
Where's that?
So
how many years now were you in when you went to Fairton?
So I was probably in about, I don't know, 11 years. Yeah, and then I went to Fairton, New Jersey, which had weights. You know, there were a bunch of homeboys there.
Yeah.
I was back in, you know, New Jersey. I was back on the East Coast.
Yeah.
I was like, wow, you know, I had just got married. Yeah. I married my, you know the story about I married my wife.
Yeah, you married Bonnie. You hear the story with this?
Yeah.
You got married twice.
I know.
Sweetheart.
Same girl. Yeah.
Great kid.
Did
I
you
love
get a con- you got a conjugal visit in there, didn't you?
I didn't get a conjugal visit, but I had a furlough years later, and we made that. The next day, I called her up, and I said, "How you doing?" She goes, "I don't feel like I got into a car accident. I feel like I got into two of them." So anyway, I mean, picture after 21 and a half years, they give you taxi money. I was working out for like 2 months knowing I was getting the date. Like, you know, and then I know how people, like, you get paranoid when you're leaving and your date's coming. You think everybody's looking at you. Yeah. The cops are
you
talking
weren't.
About
I
you.
I told you that. I got nervous. Like,
listen, I had my furlough. I was still in jail, going to be in jail for another 15 years. I thought they were like, "We can't give this guy a furlough." Every time I walked by, the cops would be talking about it. I think they're talking about me, you know? You get wigged out.
Yeah, you get bugged out.
Yeah, bugged out like a motherfucker.
Yeah.
So I was at 12 different institutions.
Yeah.
You know, and I ended up wrapping up at a drug program in Lewisburg, Pennsylvania.
You didn't lose your accent being in all these places. Well, you came back on the East Coast for a while, but when you're out in Kentucky and Virginia, right? I mean,
listen,
you start talking like that, you know?
I was in fucking Oklahoma City. It's a holdover place.
I was there too.
Listen, says to me, she goes, "You're a Yankee." I was like, "No, I'm a Red Sox fan."
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
She goes, "No, you're a Yankee." They take that shit serious over there. Kid.
I know they do.
That's serious over there. But so what? The one of the worst times I ever had in jail was I always tell the story that I got 420 months. I had a soup, got sentenced that day. I had a soup, called my mother and said, "Ma, listen, thanks for coming." Took a nap. After I got the 35 years, I took care of these cats.
Cold as ice.
Listen, I knew I was getting it. What am I going to do? Right? I said, "You got to get used to this one." This is going to happen for about 4,000 nights in a row, right? So I had these cats when I got to Lewisburg. They were a day old. They were born right when I got there, right?
Yeah.
And I told you the story that I took care of them for 13 months. They followed me everywhere. I fed them. Running around crazy, trying to get food from the commissary lady, trying to buy Macs from people.
You know,
trying
you go to the gym and
sit on the stairs. Everybody's like, "I knew you was in the gym." The cats were sitting on the stairs. They were like, "How do you train them to do that?" I said, "I didn't train them. I talk shit to them. I feed them. You know what I'm saying?" And they used to follow me around the track, you know, and then when I had to give them away, listen, crazy because, you know, it almost doesn't even make sense. You know what I'm saying? I got my date to leave. You would think this is the most momentous occasion of my life, right? I got my date to leave. But when I got my date to leave, the cats were going somewhere. I had to give them to somebody. Somebody was coming to get them. And, you know, listen, I cried like a baby, and I tried not to cry, and I would look like more of a bitch. I was like the lady from the store was like, "Bartolomeo, it's all right, it's okay." You know, I was like, you know, so I mean, I should have just probably just let the tears come out and just stayed in the corner. I wouldn't have looked much like a weirdo, you know what I'm saying? But
You do get attached, though.
Listen, you know, yeah, Bundy's a cat guy.
I know.
I got two of them now. I recreated my best moment. I got two kittens
cat.
Now.
Yeah, Bundy's cat is like a fucking, you see that thing? It looks like a fucking tiger.
It's a fucking gazelle.
But yeah, the thing's a monstrous,
it's
huh?
Unbelievable. It's two cats and
one. Should have named him Bundy. Tell him what you named the cat.
Kitty.
Yeah, Kitty. I mean, it's like the big fat guy Tiny. I get it.
Kitty's
good. That's why I call my cat Killer, because he couldn't hurt a fly.
Hey, the neighbors are out on the street. They're all laughing. They say, we see him out there at night. Kitty, Kitty. He walks out. Nice. Kitty. The thing comes fucking running. He's out there every night.
That's Kitty.
He's all worried. It's like 9, 10 at night. He's walking. Sometimes, you know, they find the cat down in the basement or somebody else's room. That cat runs a sober house. He's in every fucking room. And I got to get one for the other one, because they're great for the mice,
it's great.
The bugs, you know, they are great to have.
Yep.
So moving forward, what was I going to say? I was going to say something else. Oh, we joked about a couple of things. We joked about, I tell the story, probably told it before, when I went to rehab in Florida. I had a Samsung Galaxy. I had one for a while before I got the iPhone, but I wasn't on, you know, Instagram and Snapchat and a kid had, what do they call them? iPods. I never even had them. My father had one at the gym. So I got this kid, and he was my roommate, and he was like some kid. He was like from like outside of Cleveland, you know? And he was just like a mama's boy. They sent him here. He's doing perks. And then, you know, they knew, like, you know, I was in prison and jail, and he was kind of like almost like intimidated. You know, I don't like that. Like, buddy, I'm fucking, you know, he's like,
not going to prey on nobody.
Yeah. Like, hey, can use my thing. So I got he got all these good songs on it, you know? And now he's like not asking for it back. It's been like a day and a half. And I'm like, kid, like, you want it back? No. I said, listen. I appreciate you letting me use it. Like, you're not going to be, you know, intimidated. Not asking. He's a young kid, right? Yeah. He goes, no, but can I ask you a question? I said, yeah, what's up? He goes, when you're laying in bed listening to it, why do you hold it up like this?
Nobody would get it by
the window.
If you know, you know.
If you know, you know. Yeah, we got the Sony Walkmans in jail. We got the little homemade antennas out by the window. And there's spots where it comes in. And I said it to him, and he's laughing.
Yo, that MP3 player changed my life in prison. Changed my life. The best was I ran the ticket, and I couldn't get the scores. Like some of the small colleges for basketball, I got the thing on the floor. I got the Kanisha score. I'm like, what?
Wisconsin.
Like, I'm like, what the fuck? I just, you know, I waited all fucking, you know, you'd be up to like all hours of the night getting, oh man.
Yeah. Oh, that's a word.
MP3 player changed my life.
Yeah.
The best fucking thing that ever happened to me in prison. Amazing.
It's a little thing. People don't even understand.
Amazing.
People don't even understand.
Listen to music without static. Now I when you take that stuff for granted.
They had tablets and everything.
Yeah, they had tablets to watch movies and to play games.
And text.
No, you couldn't see. They got them in, like Wyatt now has got them where you can get everything on there. But yeah. The feds, maybe they're going to, you know, do that. But
yeah.
when I left, it was just movies and games.
And where'd you wrap up from the drug program? New Jersey?
In Lewisburg, the camp at Lewisburg, our death. That was a fucking nightmare.
Why?
Well, because I'm saying it's a camp, right?
You can get logged anytime.
No, it's a camp, and you can get anything you want in there.
Oh, yeah.
And now the drug program is, if you get fucking caught with one cell phone, they want to stop the program. You know what I'm saying? And take you a year away, you know, suspend the program for 3 months. So I was always out fucking patrolling for the cops. If they're coming, they're coming. Yeah. I was the one watching out for everybody because I never, you know, it's just, I didn't use anything. I wanted to get the fuck out of it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But you got all these younger kids that didn't do 26 and a half years. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm trying to get the fuck out of there. You know, I know at the end of the program, they suspended the program. Guys had to call them their families and say, I'm not coming home at Christmas. I'm coming home in April.
Nah, that's the worst.
Brutal.
So I like to say, when I was away, girls and food. You know, I remember, you know, I've said this before, but I never thought, you know, oh, it made my mouth water. I never thought that was a thing. That was just a saying to me until, you know, I started going away for years at a time. You're dreaming about food, or you see a commercial. I remember seeing a commercial with a Big Mac and my mouth, you know, fucking watered, you know, and I'm just like, oh, just good food, you know. Good food and women, you know, obviously the two big things. So what was your first order of business when you got out?
That's so listen, for you, food and women, you know what it was for me and it still is?
What?
Solitude. You can never get away from people. Listen.
How about when you go in a shower at first, a regular shower at home? Doesn't it seem?
It's a fucking.
It seems so small and everything.
Listen, You don't use shower shoes. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
Hey, I get out. A friend of mine picked me up. My last time I got a Walpole. He goes, I go to CVS. Kevin Boutetti hung himself in prison on Christmas Day. My closest friends growing up. But I go, you got to bring me to CVS. He goes, what are you going to get? I go, I got to get shower shoes, a soap dish. He goes, Mike, you don't need that. I go, no, I don't got it. He goes, no. Mike, you live at your aunt's house in Drake. There's a beautiful house in the ground pool. And ground pool in the back. He goes, no, you don't need that. You don't need that stuff, you know? But yeah, going home and taking a shower. Just
solitude, bro. I'm saying, you know, everything else. I mean, everything. Listen, the thing that I'm most grateful for is, listen, I got so many great people in my life. You know what I'm saying? I got guys that, like, all my friends are doing great. Like, yeah. You know, I came home and everybody that, like, you know, I mean, we talked about Jermaine. I got this guy's like my friend, Nicky Verano.
Oh, yeah.
The own Strega.
Yeah,
doing
Nicky.
Great. Called me the day I got out of prison. Was like, I'm in Florida, but I'm coming home soon. I got you. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Just a fucking sweetheart. Great. No, and then,
yeah.
You know, I told you fucking about this other guy. I was said some bullshit. Like, and I'm like, this fucking guy's the fucking. All these guys down the North End, just fucking Frankie DiPasquale. You know, fucking. I met like guys that are connected to all these guys, like, just like Eddie Gravelisi. So many guys have been. Listen, there was this kid, Eddie. He had this nice hoodie on. I went to Nicky's house.
Yeah.
Okay. And I seen the hoodie. I was like, wow, that's the fucking nicest hoodie I ever seen, ever.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So the next day I went back to the house. Nicky says, hey, come over. There's the hoodie dry cleaned. He gave it to me.
Yeah.
But that's not even it, right? I said, wow, nice hoodie. I was living over at Leo Farmer's house up in Linfield. Guy, one of the best fucking guys on the planet.
Talking about him today. Family. I was in court actually today and I.
Solid fan. Listen, Mike, how many guys you know in prison? All of them, right?
Yeah.
How many would you invite in your home?
Yeah, not many.
Not many.
Few and far between.
Yeah, well, this guy and his family opened up their door for me to come and live there.
That's a testament to who you are.
And it's a testament to who they are as well.
And what is he?
He's one of my best friends in the whole world. And, you know,
he's a great basketball player.
A great basketball player. But anyway, getting back to Eddie. So now I go up to Leo's house, and now he's got his two sons, Joey and Steven, sweethearts, right? I put the thing on the table, and they're like, where'd you get that? I'm like, my Eddie gave it to me. It's a Cartier hoodie, bro. This is fucking $1,400 for this hoodie. I'm like, what? I said it was nice. I didn't know it was that nice.
Yeah.
It's Cartier.
Yeah.
It's a $1,400 hoodie.
Imagine that, $1,400.
So when I like seen Eddie again, I was
the
like.
T-shirts are fucking.
Hey, and every time I see Eddie now, I say, Eddie, that's a nice shirt.
Yeah, yeah.
You got a Versace shirt. I like that.
Who else? I told you when I was on the plane, Charlie Lightbody there, when I
Listen.
Met him on when he beat that case, I'm on a JetBlue plane with my daughter, and these guys are sitting there, and they're saying hi to my daughter's running around. They were so nice to her. I'm saying, I know this guy from Boston, right? And I know he's somebody, right? But I couldn't put my finger on it. He was with like three or four guys, all big guys, things on, right? And then I get off the plane. I must have had a Boston Herald or something. I opened it, and he had just beat that big case. And I thought, you know, he cleaned up with that. He owned the land they built a casino on, Justin Lightbody. He owned all that land.
Listen,
the first they said it was like marshland or something. He fought, I think, just to – I'm not sure.
Cost him $1 million to beat it. But let me tell you about, like, Charlie – I didn't even know Charlie, really. I know of Charlie, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But when I was
Me
in jail,
yeah.
with all his friends, there was like eight guys he used to send money to.
Yeah.
They were like, oh, we're here with Johnny Bott. There was a ninth guy. He sent me money all the time. Never even knew the guy because he sent everybody else when he sent me money too.
Wow.
This is what I mean about that. So listen, and then listen, sweetheart. And I'm going to tell you one thing about Charlie, right? Because, you know, I love Charlie. I talk to Charlie. He's a fucking sweetheart of a guy, great guy. If you ever meet this guy and you talk to him, listen, dynamite human being. Cost him, listen, I seen the shit with it. I'm not a guy that says, oh, the feds are this. You know, listen, I did a crime. I went to prison. I got along good with everybody, you know. And then after fucking doing, like, being in jail for 20 years, all the guards knew me. They were like, hey, Bartolomeo. I'd go to the ward, wax the warden's floors, do everything. I was that guy, you know what I'm saying? Because I had a great rapport with everybody. So I'm not the guy that fucking says, oh, the feds this, the feds that, whatever the case may be is. I didn't fucking get arrested with a three-piece suit and a briefcase.
Yeah.
I was fucking out killing people, selling drugs, whatever the case may be is. So Charlie, though, this guy's just like, he don't have no violent crimes, no nothing. What the feds did to this guy, the way they went into his house.
They go after the money.
It's insanity. Like, I never seen nothing like it. And they made him, because I know the story, they made him sign his portion over to a guy, I forget his name. Anthony, I think his name was Gianneri or something like that. I know the guy's name. I remember him telling me this.
Yeah.
And the guy fucked Charlie out of the money. Fucking piece of shit.
How much did the guy make up then?
I don't even know what he made. I know Charlie paid $1 million for his legal defense.
Wow.
Cost him a fucking $1 million to beat a case that he should have never even been involved in.
Yeah.
And sign the fucking shit over to me and you. Got to pack. Listen, Mike, I'm going to sign everything over to you. Take care of me when this is over.
What a scumbag.
Yeah. And the guy's from up in fucking Winchester, I think.
Really?
Gianneri.
When the kind of rings a bell.
Yeah. Fucking, you believe that?
Watch out for those Italians.
Yeah, watch out.
You got to watch out. We got to watch out. Listen, Bundy, watch
out. We can't paint everybody with a broad brush. But I'm saying conversely, you know, on the other side of the pole, with guys that are fucking great guys, that's Charlie. Charlie's there. Got Frankie DiPasquale from the North End.
I never met him, but he owns everything.
Sweetheart.
He owns everything in North End.
You know what the thing is? Listen, you know what they did in that North End? No corporations are in there. It's all mom and pop shops.
No, they have one like a Bobo yogurt or something.
No, CVS. That's about it. But I'm saying they did it. Listen, when I went back to the North End, the only thing I missed was the Cafe Pompeo. It was a big Pompeo.
That was my spot till 4 a.m.
All the time.
It was open till 4 a.m.
All the time.
Hey, that was my spot. Ronnie, Joe, cheese and sauce.
Absolutely.
Chicken cutlet, cheese and sauce.
That was the only thing I missed. But listen.
Hey, hold on. People to this day, actually, Stacey Susie's brother, Sean, right? He's in the feds, Sean Susie. He'd always say, remember when we went to the Cafe Pompeii that night? They let us in. I think it was Mario or somebody. He locked the door.
Mario's
he goes,
the
come
old
on.
Man.
He took me. He took me in the back. And it was like the New Kids on the Block, Mark Wahlberg.
Yeah.
And I had a bunch of coke on me. I'm partying. I'm there all night, right?
Yeah, that
and
was awesome.
Every time I see the kid, he tells me a story. He goes, you remember that night? And I go, no.
Yeah,
he goes, you don't remember it? I go, no fucking recollection at all. But it sounds like a great story. So yeah. Maybe
it's
I'll
Il
tell
Panino
it again.
Now. That's where it used to be.
Yeah.
Il Panino.
Yeah, the Pompeii. Remember they used to have a picture of Chuck Mangione and Marvin Hagler.
Because Marvin Hagler was like, went to Italy to fight. That's the big thing.
Yeah,
and he was like, I used to see him in there. He used to speak with like an Italian accent. I'm like, this guy speaks English.
Yeah. Yeah, you'd walk in right on the left. You get the subs and everything. They'd sit there at a table playing cards on the right, then the back, then the back on the left. They had the back room.
I used to love it over
Me
there.
Me too, the Pompeii.
Now my place is Dolce.
Yeah.
Love Dolce. The best. That's one of Frankie's
Sit there
places.
And sip
love
on cappuccinos like a gentleman.
Espresso.
Espresso.
Get
Me
geeked
too.
Out.
I've been, that's another thing, as you know, been like over a month. I really haven't had sugar. I mean, I had a cannoli the other night, but no Pepsis, no cream and sugar in my coffee. I mean, I was always having a cappuccino, this and that.
You got to get your jumping rope now.
Espressos. Oh, I don't know about that. I did legs the other day. My one of my trainers, I got, well, I don't have any trainers, but the kid Swan on here was good. He's real knowledgeable, but I got Brock Dokas. He's he trains a lot of the high school athletes around my way. He wrote me up a routine. I did legs for the first time. So I've been back at the gym probably a month and a half, 2 months, done legs a few times, but now I'm doing the goblet squats and this, that, and, you know, step ups, body weight, and lunges. And I've been having trouble walking for the last fucking 3 days, you know. But,
it's good, though. It's worth it.
You know, I can feel it. You know, I feel like I put on some muscle, but I dropped. I was like 226. I'm like 214. So 12 pounds, it ain't a lot, but I can feel it.
It's a fucking ton.
I feel great.
You can see it. You can see it.
Get a fucking, get a kettlebell that's 12 pounds and carry it around with you all day and see how much 12 pounds weighs.
Yeah, exactly. And Bundy, did you see? No, see, Bundy's on my Snapchat. I download Instagram for him. I try to teach him how to use rah, rah, right? But there's a video of Johnny jumping rope the other day.
Yeah.
Oh,
he's fucking ripped.
Look at it's fucking disgusting. My girl, sorry, she broke up with me 2 days later.
I hit him in the stomach again.
Listen, I don't know if there was had anything to do with it.
Listen,
but,
I'm trying to get extra innings, buddy. Anything I can do to fucking extend this feeling, I want it.
Justin, I said it to him. I go, your life is in quarters, right? 15 years. Third quarter, 30 to 45. Fourth quarter, 45 to 60. We're in the fourth quarter. 60 to 75 overtime. Right? 75 to 90, double overtime.
Ooh.
After that, you know, sudden death.
You
90,
want quality.
90
quality
to 105,
of life.
Sudden death overtime.
Quality
you know?
Of life. That's why I do what I do.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know.
Discipline, baby. Discipline.
Yeah,
for me, that's the ticket.
And I told someone the other day, I told him there's somebody I don't speak to anymore. He used to be, you know, he used to be a friend of mine. But I remember he said, you know, if Mike Lee can stop, you know, shooting, you know, I don't even fucking.
Dope.
Yeah. dope. He can stop shooting dope and coke, and I can stop eating fucking Oreos, you know?
Right,
and
right.
I think of that because I was really, I mean, I love pizza. Someone started saying to me, is that all you eat is pizza? Because I'm always putting it on my Snapchat and Instagram.
Right, right, right.
I'm just slamming pizzas and subs and then cannolis and eating late at night. And you feel like shit.
Yeah,
you know, you feel like shit afterwards. But I think I'm in a good place now where I can eat a fucking pizza now and then. But I cut the soda out. I'd always have a soda.
Huge.
I'd have a soda at lunch, soda with like dinner, and every night I'd grab a Gatorade at the store and I'd have it next to my bed and I'd chug a Gatorade. And that, boom, that went the way of fucking wooden hockey nets now.
Yeah.
It's nothing, it's nothing but water now.
Hockey.
Yeah, wooden hockey nets and fucking buckle down shoes.
Yeah.
You know? But yeah, so I'm back at it and I feel good, you know? What else we got going on? We just been, Johnny's, last night was the first night without a curfew. So
yeah.
He's been out a year. They took the bracelet off yesterday, and every time I'd be with him, you know, he'd be with friends, we'd be out to eat, and all of a sudden it's like, you know, 8:30, he's like, all right, I gotta go. And I'm like, what the fuck?
Yeah. 8:50, the Tobin Bridge. There he goes. Not no more.
Yeah, so, I mean, you're an early riser anyway, but just not to have that, you know, like I said.
I'm here, I can do, remember, I mean, this all started with you now getting in touch with our friend from Revere.
Oh, we got to shout out Ika.
Ika!
Jason Callanan. Ika, I was going to anyway, I would have forgot, but that's my guy, Ika.
And so he got in touch with me, and then, because what had happened is, I did a couple podcasts with a couple of people, and my case manager said, I just want you to know that they can send you back for that because you agreed when you signed for home confinement that you wouldn't have contact with the media.
Oh.
So this is why we're doing this today.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, and... How did you reach out to me? How did you know who I was?
I've been hearing your name for a while. Of course, with the Free Johnny Bot, this was a big thing around Boston. I heard your name forever. And then your co-defendant, Greg Domi, was locked up with our friend Spiro.
Oh, okay. Oh, Spiro.
So when he got out, Spiro went and met him, and I went with them, went to his house
and
helped him buy some motorcycles. So I've been hearing your name.
Yeah.
When did Greg get out? So I've been hearing about you since...
Yeah, a while. You know what? This whole thing that, you know, I've been selling this apparel. This is part of my apparel line
and
stuff. Yeah,
you're going to shout that out on your Instagram and everything.
Well, yeah, we definitely got to do that. But, I mean, the thing is it's just been such a humbling experience that people, like, buy stuff with my name on it.
Yeah.
I bought my Bean Shooter shirt this morning, too.
Did you really?
I know that.
My man.
Of course. I got it. Kid. What are you? We got to support each other, right?
Absolutely.
That's what we do.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's such a humbling thing when, you know, I walk into Feast, I seen the girl that she was like serving cannolis and she had 27 straight apparel Celtic shirt. I was like, wow. I said, let me take a picture with you.
Yeah.
And then it was Eric Rogers' daughter over there. I was like, come on, let's go. You know,
he's another one. What a great guy.
Fucking listen.
What a fucking great. I heard his name.
Solid.
I heard his name all the time too. Listen, just never met him.
And listen, you know, these people, like, you know, like, so my name rung like a bell, right? You would think you had a perception of what I was.
Yeah,
like,
100%.
Oh my God. Same thing with Eric. Like, listen, all we do is laugh, have a great time. You know, it's just, you know, we're in the autumn of our lives, right? And, you know, we were the type of people we were, and we've developed into different people, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And, you know, listen, being around good guys, just the energy, just the time we have,
just the short time
I spent 100%. With Bundy, I'm saying, you know, we like, this is a good dude, this is a good guy.
Yeah,
like,
he was saying, you better have a shirt here tonight, the 4X.
I know, he's going to beat me.
I was looking forward to it.
He's going to beat me. I know. I definitely got you.
But, I'm like, Bundy, I still haven't gotten him a 4X and the Bean should have won. But
I know.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, this has all been such a blessing. Like, it's humbling to me. Like, I don't see how anybody could get... You know, conceited about these type of things. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, people come up to you, I heard your voice. And you're like, you know, it's just to every day. It's just, you know, and we were out with Wiggy the other night. And, you know, and then some guys were like, hey, it's that Johnny. And Wiggy's like, I'm not even the celebrity no more. You are.
Yeah,
but like, you know, and when we have like, and all everybody's always like, Bean Shooter. I mean, it's just good to be around that. It's just, I mean, in this day and age, everybody complains, like, you know, what I see from fresh eyes is people complain about technology, complain about this. I'm not trying to be bitter. I'm going to use this to the best of my ability. I'm going to try to make a few dollars. If I can make $200 a day selling apparel and, you know, networking, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Doing what we do, like, and just, I don't even know a drug dealer. Yeah. That's good. A conclusion I came to the other day. I'm like, I don't even know a guy that sells drugs. Nor do I want to. I'm thinking, I think it's a dead business. I think it's a sucker's business. But nowadays, you know what I'm saying?
You hang around, like Spiro always said it, you hang around with people that are successful, it rubs off.
Listen, I love
you
that.
You hang around with people that are doing great.
He's a good dude.
It's going to fucking rub off and you're going to do good. And the same goes the other way.
Yep.
Hang around people that are selling drugs. You hang around people that are doing drugs.
Yep. And, yeah, I don't want to be around it. I mean, me and you, that's why I love being around you because, you know, you don't, listen, a guy wants to, if you enjoy something, please do it. You know what I'm saying? If it becomes a problem, then you need to talk to yourself and stop. But if you're a type of guy that likes to drink, listen, me and you will hang out with everybody. Let them drink, do their thing. Me, I don't. And the thing I always say, and I told you this the other day, is I got my friend Mikey has a beautiful 5-year-old daughter. Her name is Stella. And, you know, everybody's always saying, hey, you want to have a drink? You want a drink? And I'm like, nah, I don't desire it, you know? And I said to my friend, I said, can you imagine the one day that Stella has somebody to look at and say, like, I've never seen Uncle John drink, right? Wouldn't you want that? You got one person, right?
Yeah.
So it's always, I always use that. And I always talk about perpetuating who people believe you are. When I was a kid, I perpetuated who people.
Yeah, you don't want to be phony. I was like that guy.
I am that guy. I'm a fucking maniac and I'm going to be a maniac. Now it's the opposite. Yeah. Now it's like, you got me as, you know, a guy that don't drink. So now I have to not drink, not do drugs, be a good guy, be somebody that's going to set a good example for people. And I think, you know, I kind of thrive in that environment by, you know, living up to somebody's expectations. But that's who I want to be. Yeah. I want to make my mother proud every day. That's my philosophy.
And that's great. When I, my father, to go off what you're saying, when I was fucking up doing drugs again, he came down the stairs. I'll never forget, I was on the couch, and he said, aren't you sick of proving people right?
I love it.
You know, everybody says, he'll be back. You know, he'll be back in jail soon. He goes, here you are, proving everybody right, you know? Yeah. You got good friends, guys that fucking look out for you and want you to do good in life. Well, there was Mickey and Spiro, and he you know, he hammered me, and he said, aren't you sick of proving people right? You know, and that, you know, when someone says something to you like that, right?
Hits home.
Yeah, it hits home. It stuck with me. And I said, man, you know, and I felt like, you know, there was a point in my life the day before I got sober, before Mickey Ward took me to Florida. My father said to my daughter, like, he doesn't like to talk about it. He goes, I come home early from the bar that day, and he never does, St. Patty's Day. And he heard a bang on the floor, and I tried to fucking hang it up. I don't remember. I was whacked out. I was going to rehab the next morning. I don't know why I did. And I'd always think, my father was that guy, kind of like your guy, like your father, right? Well-respected bartender in Lowell, a bookie, just a great guy. Sure. Stand-up, solid guy, right? And I'm thinking, imagine if I succeeded and he found me, what they would have said about me, right?
100%.
They would have said, wow, he tortured his father, right? His father's a great guy. He fucking tortured the guy and then he hangs himself in the fucking house, you know? But, you know, something else happened. You know, I went to rehab the next day and I look back now and people say to me, your father's so proud of you. Now, my father never said, I love you.
Right.
I never said, Mike, you know, I'm so proud of you. Yeah. But I know he is.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's just, I'm so fortunate, you know, that I 100%. That Mickey took me down to Florida, that I was in Florida and I couldn't leave because I had $13 on me and I didn't know where the hell I was. You know, it's a bunch of things. But it's like I look back now, like you say, making mom proud. You know, I don't talk about it much and I like toot my own horn like, oh, so I did this. But, you know, when I think about it, you talking about your family so much, it's just like, man, you know, it could have went so different. You know, I could have fucking, you know, could be dead. Mm-hmm. And look at what the fuck I accomplished. Once again, not to say, you know, it wasn't without help. Spiro, I never thought I could buy my own house.
Right.
You know what I mean? If I tell you buy this, you know, you got 60 grand saved up. It's only 100. It was 130,000, 135 I bought my first house for. So I got real lucky. But it was just, you know, when you got good people around you and you're doing the right thing, good things happen, man.
Yeah.
You catch breaks. Yep. You know, when you're sitting around getting high, oh, I can never catch a break.
Right.
Or, oh, you know, I went to jail when I was 17 and, you know, this happened to me and that and, this happened. And when you're that guy, always blaming and making excuses and that instead of just like you owning it, doing it and just coming out with the fucking attitude you have. I mean, it's a testament to who you are, but it's just such great energy. And I just think nothing but good can happen, you know?
No, I agree.
100%. So far.
Yeah, so far, so good. You know, we just take it a day at a time. And like we were talking about health the other day, I'm saying, you know, that's, that, you know, that fluctuates too. So we have to just be grateful to just, listen, be here to shoot the shit. Well, that's what we're doing here. We're just we're talking, right? We're having a good time. We're hanging out, getting to meet new people. We're building relationships. That's the thing for me, is to just keep building relationships.
Yeah.
You know, just to live pro-socially and just, you know, just, listen, wealth to me is much different than wealth, the perception of wealth to other people. My idea of wealth is, you know, to have time to enjoy myself, you know what I'm saying? To sell a few items of clothing, you know what I'm saying? To meet people. I love meeting people. That's the most amazing thing. People that don't even, know, like, coming up to me. Like, that makes my day, like, you know what I'm saying? I really appreciate that.
I can't wait for the day that we get you on a plane. When's the last time you've been on a plane?
Well, I was in a plane with handcuffs and shackles plenty of times. You don't want to crash with handcuffs and shackles.
No.
I've seen great men crumble on planes. You know, I'm just...
You know, I saw this thing the other day. I was sitting home watching, like, court TV, and there was two people in the back of a sheriff's van, and it was like flood... it was flood warnings, and they told them, go this way. They charged a guy with manslaughter. He got convicted. The screw, right?
Imagine dying like that.
Hey, yeah. So he went a different way, and it got caught in, like, the thing, and they got out of the van and ran, said they couldn't open the door. They were stuck in the cage in the back. It was
they got out and ran, imagine.
Yeah, they got out and ran, drowned, convicted him of manslaughter. The second guy, I don't know if he got convicted. I forget what it was, but yeah, Jesus Christ. I heard that. I was like,
handcuffs and shackles.
Yeah. So you've been on a plane. When's the last time you've been on a plane, you know?
You know, I got my passport. I'm ready to go to
Canada. Yeah, I know. That's why.
I'm ready to, you know, I'm ready to take you tomorrow. I'm practicing my Spanish too, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, we got to get Chris. Valare Rivera.
Valare Restaurant Rivera. Yeah, that's my
The filet mignon with the blueberry sauce?
Forget it.
Are you kidding me?
Out of this world. The kids.
I know I'm getting another one of them on the fucking sleeve after just shouting him out
on
right
now.
On
the mouse, right? Listen, what a good kid, though. Really,
oh, yeah, we hit it off,
genuinely,
man.
Good kid. He was down there. He speaks Spanish.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, he's got his ID down there. I don't know if he's a dual citizen. Yeah. He's got something. He's got something. Listen, he can stay 90 days.
On my YouTube channel?
Yeah.
You got to check it out. I just did something called the 15-minute Spanish lesson.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's 15 minutes, right? Because I used to do seminars in prison.
I can only order food. That's it.
Yeah, so listen, 15-minute Spanish lessons on my YouTube channel. It's pretty cool. Check it out.
I will. I'm on it. Instagram, official.
Johnny Bartolomeo. Official underscore Johnny underscore Bartolomeo.
Yep. What about your merch Instagram page? And
2727str8. Underscore apparel.
What does that mean, 27 straight?
So that's the time I did in prison. I was always toying with that idea, right? I used to write the 27 and then STR8, 27 straight. And what happened, this whole thing that happened, there's my brother Charlie, right? He had some shirts left over for this time they were going to do for me. And it was like bad weather that never materialized.
No, just sitting in a box.
He said, go up there and sign them and sell them. And I'm like, Charlie, who the fuck is going to buy a fucking shirt with my signature on it? You know what I'm saying? What are you thinking? You know? So what happened was I signed them, put them on Instagram.
You got a nice signature. I print. I'm terrible. He signed my wall the other day. He signed my wall up in my prison cell. I took him up and you should see how I live.
All you need is stainless steel commode. The sample was the best, kid. It looked like... When I first seen it, I was like, put that away. SIS is going to see. They're going to come to your cell and see that shit. Don't put it on like that. Put it on your pillow at least.
You got the ice pick next to the bed.
Fucking awesome. Yeah, listen. Living like a certified fucking convict. Yeah. Not like a gent.
No. Definitely not like a gent. Oh, man. All right. We're going to wrap it up, Johnny, man. I want to thank you for coming on.
Fucking pleasure.
You
kidding me?
Great. This was great.
Bundy. I love Bundy. Bundy, I got you a sweatshirt.
All right, that's 35, right, Justin? Justin got married this past weekend. Hey, we want to give Justin a shout out. Congratulations Justin, pal. Man.
And that's what we go to Columbia little... for. We got hookers. But anyway, I didn't mean that toward you. There's a lot of people in the room, Justin.
He looks a little tired, man. He looks a little tired. You're ready for bed, huh?
Ready.
Well, at least we came in here early, man. Hey, thanks a lot. Thanks, everyone. That's a wrap. If you're wearing a mask out there, the fresh air's gonna get you. He always shoots from the hip for iced coffee, take a sip, toss it out the window.